Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Wherever you're getting it, iTunes, Stitcher, your Android device, your iPhone, aboutlastnightpodcast.com, wherever you're getting the program, baby, we appreciate the love. And thanks for all the five-star ratings on iTunes. You guys are crushing that. And your reviews, if you haven't done so yet, take 2 seconds. Go to the iTunes page for About Last Night. Give a little review right now. Write something sweet. We love the show. You guys are cool. Whatever you want to do, man, give it a 5-star rating as well. Helps us climb the charts and continue to give you guys great programs. I've said programs twice, like I'm a man in his 70s. I really enjoyed your program, son. Somebody did say that to me once after a stand-up show. Your program was lovely. I was like, thank you. Can I have a Werther's Original, sir? Today's show, one of my favorites we've done in a long time, because it's with a guy who is a pro, not only on stage, but off stage and behind the mic for podcasts. He brings it. He's quick. He's sharp. He's got a great voice, which I love. I love great voices, man. It just makes the whole package more interesting to listen to. And this is a guy that I've been a fan of the first time I saw him when I started 9 years ago. And he's a comics comic. He's got so many credits, from Letterman to Leno to 2 specials. His latest special, Big Dumb Animal, on Netflix, which you should all check out because it's amazing. Comedy Central, he's going to be a recurring actor on Marvel's Agent X coming up on ABC. At Midnight, you've seen him on Conan. He's the man. He's hilarious. He crushed it today. And his name is Matt Bronger. That's right, baby. Matt Bronger. Some of the shit that we get into in this episode is just, again, a reason why I love doing this podcast. Stuff that you only hear from people who've lived these types of journeys. Grew up in Portland. He started stand-up in Chicago with Kyle Kinane and TJ Miller and Hannibal Buress. I mean, his journey to L.A. Sorry, my alarm went off. His journey to L.A. is quite remarkable, how he got into the commercial world. The jobs that his folks do, being an only child, was incredibly interesting. How he started a comedy festival. Matt Bronger started the Bridgetown Comedy Festival in Portland, which is bananas, man. There's so many big comedy festivals, and he started one of them, and has given comics like a really great avenue to be seen and to have fun, and he gets into that, which is really interesting. We also talk about airplane horror stories, commercial auditions, and he also gives really astute advice for young comedians, which, again, I know is something a lot of the young comics who listen to our podcast appreciate. Matt really dives into some great shit and perspective, and just talking about moving to LA and having goals and accomplishing them, and it's all gravy, baby. I've never said that before in my entire life, you guys. Holy shit, it's all gravy, baby. But it is. Bronger's the man. He crushed it. Enjoyed this pod as much as we did. And follow Maddie on Twitter, at Bronger. That's all it is, baby. At Bronger. B-R-A-U-N-G-E-R. Follow me on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter, at Funny Brad. And go see me. Where am I going to be? New York City, baby. This Friday through Sunday, Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. I'm so pumped, man. It's my first time headlining this club. It's Valentine's Day weekend. Get your tickets at GothamComedyClub.com and come spend your weekend with me. 2 shows Friday, 2 shows Saturday, and Valentine's Day, baby. I've got special guests coming through all weekend. More notably on Sunday, my boy John Rudnitsky from SNL is doing the Sunday show. He's going to open for me on that Sunday on Valentine's Day. So you get a double dose of fun. And I've got some other big name guys dropping in on Friday and Saturday. So get your tickets at GothamComedyClub.com and come see me headline my first time in New York City. It'll be a fun time for everybody. And then, of course, AdamRayTV.com for all my other tour dates. Got Denver, Minnesota coming up, and a lot of other fun stuff. Speaking of my website, I dropped a new video today. Yeah. Hey, have you ever wondered what Brad Williams' cologne commercial would look like? Well, you don't have to wonder any longer, because it's online, baby. I mean, I've tweeted it. It's on Facebook. It's on my YouTube channel. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, Adam Ray Comedy. But also just, you know, Twitter, Facebook. I posted it a bunch. All right. We shot this cologne commercial for Brad, and it's unbelievable. My boys, James and Dave Cadeglia, shot and edited for me. I wrote this baby. They shot it. And Sid Wilder, a comedian friend of ours, gorgeous, hilarious, makes a great appearance in this. And it's hilarious. So check it out. Tweet it out. Pass it along. You're going to love it. It's on my YouTube channel. Yeah. Anyway, Brad is going to be this weekend in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, at Wisecrackers at Mohegan Sun. That's right, baby. You want to see Brad? If you live in Pennsylvania, go see Brad at the Wisecrackers at Mohegan Sun. He'll be there February 11th through the 14th. Go see Brad. Get your tickets at wisecrackers.com. Go see Brad. Wisecrackers at Mohegan Sun, February 11th through the 14th. Of course, follow the podcast on Twitter at ALN Podcast. Also on Instagram at ALN Podcast. I'm at AdamRay33 on Instagram. Oh my God. It's early. Brad is at Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Follow us on those sites. And also, while you're on the internet, go to AstoyMerchandise.com and get all your ALN merch, baby. Hats, shirts, mugs, Ronin the Quave shirts, Life My Life shirts, ALN shirts, posters, commemorative ALN posters. I don't know if you guys have seen how dope they are, but they're dope, all right? It's got so many of your favorite guests on a first ever official commemorative poster. You can get them signed, too. That's pretty cool. So go to AstoyMerchandise.com, ESTOYMerchandise.com, and get your ALN merch, baby. Bring it to the shows, and we'll sign it for you, okay? And last but not least, oh, man, this is exciting. First of all, as you know, I've been posting some stuff about my new TBS show that I'm co-hosting with Eliza Schlesinger called Separation Anxiety that premieres March 8th on TBS. I'm pumped. It's a game show, dating show, prank show. It's an hour long. It's awesome, man. It's way cooler than any game show you've ever seen, especially with the couples. The casting that they did with these couples, you know, some episodes there's these two dude best friends, there's two sisters, a couple that has been married for 2 years, a couple that's been dating for five and not married. You really get to know these couples, which is, I think, an original take on a game show, because most game shows are like, you know, Wheel of Fortune, hey, what's your favorite color, you know, who do you, where are you from, cool, who gives a shit. This one, you really get to know these couples. I get to be really funny in it. You know, as I told you, I think before, it's they separate a couple, they think they're playing together on a shitty internet game show with me, they separate them, one goes off with Eliza on a big main stage, one stays with me, they're playing together, they have no idea what's going on, and the reveals are incredible. Also, this Sunday, February 14th, after the NBA All-Star Game on TBS, they're premiering one of the episodes to give you guys like a sneak peek. So check it out. Check your local listings. But TBS, Sunday, February 14th, a special preview episode of Separation Anxiety on TBS, the show that premieres March 8th officially with myself and Eliza Schlesinger. But you get a sneak peek, preview of the show. Sunday, February 14th on TBS. Check that out. All right? Yeah? Does that sound good? All right. Now that we got the merch info out of the way, those are the tour dates. Those are the Twitter handles. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the hilarious Matt Bronger.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Is there a problem with those headphones?
Does the right left thing matter?
I don't think so. Because no. I don't think there is a right left, right?
Yeah, I didn't see one.
Yeah, me neither.
Great.
But also, it's weird on the head. Like, why wouldn't you just put that there? If every other headphone set has a right and
right.
a left.
But maybe they're trying to do that's their left turn.
Maybe in this age of, like, Caitlyn Jenner, they're like, you know what? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Maybe you started off with that.
Why define yourself?
Yeah. Is it really a right ear headphone, or can it be either one?
It's not just frustrating people that like the right and left. It's frustrating the guy that likes to wear the right hand on his left. Like, that has to be a guy.
Totally.
And then probably some guy that announces it every time. Like you know how like sometimes you meet a vegan like within the first second right. and a oh. half it's always like so I'm coming over to watch the game with you but I'm a vegan just so you know
it's the first thing you'd find out about this guy
it's like hey, we're getting together for Super Bowl do you want to come and it's like well I would but just so you know I wear the headphones on the opposite sides
you wear headphones when you go watch a game
yeah
I do that too
do.
That's the second thing you find out about me. It's just completely unrelated.
Do you think there are deal breakers for dude friendships? Like the same way that like
for
you know,
me there is.
Like red flags. Like you go out on a date with a girl, and if immediately she's like, you know, it's weird for me dating. You know, having it been you know already 6 marriages in 5 years. like you know, and I don't know who's getting on the receiving end of that stat, but I feel like something like that would immediately make me go, cool. I'm gonna order one more Shasta, and then I'm gonna get the fuck out of here. And yes, I'm going
over the Shasta bar myself. I'm not gonna wait for the Shasta waitress.
Yeah,
but no, absolutely. There's got I've met a lot of guys who just have that one thing. You're like, oh, we can't. It's like that Chris Rock bit where he's like, a girl would just meet you and be like, oh, I'm fucking this guy.
Right. Yeah.
I hope he doesn't say something dumb and fuck it up.
Yeah. Because they know
it's
immediately.
It's like that same thing when you meet a guy, you're like, we're never hanging
Most
out.
Most of the time
bro.
When I meet a guy, I'm like, I am definitely not fucking this guy.
Most of the time. Too.
Most of the time.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
He's got soft skin.
Yeah. You know. I don't know.
In a pinch.
Yeah. Sure. Never know.
Where are we in the Navy?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it is the same thing. But like meeting some, this friendship's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, like all my close friends that I consider close friends that I could call up and hang out with, we're all sports people,
right? Yeah.
Just so there, we can always have that to fall back on. If like, well, it's we haven't hung out in a while. Let's go to the game. Let's go watch a game. Let's go talk about a game.
Talk about sports.
Yeah. There's a game involved. You know.
Right.
So there's never that low point. So if I was like hanging out and like. Sometimes you go on those like adult play dates where people are like, "Oh no, you should meet this guy. Like you guys would totally get along."
That's always a weird like suggestive you guys would really bond and be great.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know,
and it's too much pressure.
Totally.
You know who you would love? Oh, my buddy Doug.
Yeah.
You got to come out.
Yeah.
You got to meet him. I told him the same thing about you.
I don't want friendship
like,
pressure
you know
as an adult.
We're not gay. Yeah. If we were gay, then all right.
And then and then there's like this like expectancy to have some sort of like really like classic exit handshake hug combo at the end because it's like, well, Mark said we were going to like really hit it off and then if like
so we should just freestyle this handshake and see what happens.
Have our own. And it's weird if like you don't feel that much of a connection but the other guy is just like, "Yeah, man. They were right, huh? Yeah. High five." Where do you live down the street?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I don't even live here. I'm visiting. Stop looking at me.
I live in Canada. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're on Craigslist looking at apartments. I used to.
Have you been on Craigslist ever to get anything?
Oh, God. I remember back.
When it first came out.
Well, yeah, like, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And it was kind of that...
Isn't it great?
The wild frontier of... I mean, did you ever... I tried dating on Craigslist, where you just...
I remember that was a thing.
Casual encounters?
I didn't put a thing up myself, no.
Misconnections?
I feel like casual encounters are much more honest.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're just there to bone and whatever. Yeah.
I would love to see... I don't know why there hasn't been a dating show that has exposed all of those interactions. Because there's got to be a couple out there right now who is on... another amazing vacation with their 4 kids.
Yeah.
And literally, like, just so puppy love everywhere they go. And the flight attendant on the flight's even like, "You guys just, how long have you been married, if you don't mind me asking?" 15 years, going on 15 years. Like, wow. Or you know, and where did you meet? Craigslist.
Yeah. And casual encounters.
Yeah. I posted.
I want to meet the married couple that met on casual encounters.
I posted,
that'd be incredible.
Who's the big titty lady with the ball cap walking out of the coffee bean shitter? And she said, me. And then we met up and literally had everything in common.
Yeah.
But, like, there's got to be,
there
has to be those stories.
Well, and it's, like, misconnections was such, at this point, doing jokes about misconnections is just hack.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how many comics have you heard that are just like, you, playing with a Rubik's Cube, stuffed up your vagina.
Yeah.
Me, can't stop looking through your window. You know, whatever it is. Like,
I did that bit last night. It's my closer, and I really don't appreciate you coming at me like that, Matt.
Classic Williams closer.
Classic, man.
So when it first hit, you would use it.
Oh, today. I went on, I think, a date with one or two people. There's only one. No, I think just one. And just was, like, fine, but no. I mean, she was nice, but there was just nothing, like, she was... she might as well have showed up with a t-shirt that said boyfriend or bust.
Oh yeah.
You know,
okay.
Like everything she talked about was, I'm just looking for someone that's not here to play games and not here to, and I'm just,
well, sorry, sweetheart, you came to the wrong city.
I want to just I wasn't like, you know, I kind of missed the Tinder thing. I've been in a relationship for a couple years, but like my friend Renee went on this date with this dude, and you know, she went out, it's just like how, of course, how women and men look at things, and guys are just like, oh, it's Grindr, but for straights.
Yeah. Yeah.
And women
so
are
just
like,
sex.
It's where I meet the man of my dream
yeah.
for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So she went out with this guy, and he showed up in like sweatpants and like just bummy, and like, let's see what we're working with, and looked her up and down. Like,
what?
And she's like, no.
You don't get to do that.
Oh. And they were going on like a coffee date. You know, that's not even...
But like you at least bring your best self to a coffee date, right?
Right.
But maybe
and don't be that. Every guy wants to be that guy, like a stud. That's just
know.
Like I get it right away, man. It's always girls think I'm awesome
because
I'm like forward, and that's why people. That's why guys text terrible things.
The worst.
And like
guys need to stop throwing the Hail Mary on first down because they're ruining it for everybody.
Okay? That's exactly it.
There's a good girlfriend of mine who told me a guy. Literally, they met at the bar briefly. She was sweet, so she gave. And a lot of girls do this. They're just like, oh, it was easier to give him my number than to not, you know?
Sure, right.
And so, shit, an ex-girlfriend of mine did that to some, like, weird Indian dude at some party we were at. And he was just super, like, aggressive. And Indian wasn't pertinent to the story, but I felt like I was really...
You're thrown in details.
I was able to
see the moment
we're not picturing the accent of him being extra creepy.
And you know
like
what?
This.
It was that, and it was strong.
It just makes it better.
And he was better. And she gave... And she was like, oh... And then he texted her one night, and I was like, who's that? And she was like, oh, it was that guy... at the bar, and I go, why'd you give him your number? She's like, I just didn't want to be rude. I go, yeah, but you and I are fucking, like, what's, and then she ended up cheating on me, so whatever, but, like, point of the story is, so my friend tells me, minimal interaction at the bar, dude texts her, you know, hey, what's going on, blah, 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 and then literally, like, the third text was, do you want to smoke a joint and take a bath tonight? ... bubble bath. Which, by the way, hilarious that you got to specify
bubble
what kind
bath.
Of bath.
Right.
Well,
like, as
mean,
if that's less creepy. And
he's letting her know that, hey, so I don't see you naked right away. You can slowly dip into the bath and the bubbles can be covering you. But then at some point, I am going to look at you and go, and then all the bubbles are going to fly off and I will see you
earthquake
naked.
Earthquake slamming into the side of the
tub. But it's like suggesting that right away. It's like dudes have this like eighth grade football coach mentality of like, we got to score on the first play. It's
right
like,
away.
Coach, why don't we run the ball, get a few yards? No. Get her number, try to fuck her in the Uber on the way to the airport. It's like
I think it's also people just don't understand how final and brutal the written word is. Like when you read an email, if someone's just like, "Hey, fuck you, man," like ha ha. But if you just emailed someone, "Fuck you, man," it's like you're gonna die. So like April Richardson, who's hilarious, put this thing up of this dude that sent her like a friend request on Facebook that said, "Hey, add me as a friend because." You look like my friend Ashley, who I really, really want to bang. Just like, wait,
what?
So I get to replace that person
who
you're friends with that you don't have the balls to tell you want to sleep with.
I can do that. So
and
you can call me Ashley.
Yeah, well, yeah. Put a mask on me. Yeah. Put a bag on my head, write Ashley on it with a hole for an eye in your dick. But she put it on Instagram, and a bunch of people were like, what an idiot. And then this girl was like, hey, I'm Ashley. I know who that guy is.
Wow.
He's never said anything to me. We went to high school together.
Yeah.
He's just a random friend of mine on Facebook, just like any friend kind of thing. But I blocked him.
Oh, like, shit.
Just immediate justice.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, good, because he was probably going to wake up. Like, she was probably going to wake up one morning and he's going to be outside her house. When,
right.
Like, he can't take it anymore.
Right. No,
like,
we're friends. I get to have sex.
it's this weird thing where also, And it's amazing that some people will text things that forward because you can have things like that where someone just screenshot, post,
yes,
done, and then and especially if you're of any fame or anything whatsoever, but not even that. Remember the Uber driver that got the Taco Bell executive fired?
Yes,
because this executive was drunk and just immediately just. Like, the Uber driver pulled over and then just said, you're too drunk. I'm not going to drive you anywhere.
Which, by the way, you have full, jurisdiction to do that.
It's their personal car.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Like,
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think people
not required.
There's an uber arrogance that has developed amongst.
Oh, it's like we live in a magical wonderland.
That's
for
exactly
us people that enjoy substances.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you can hit a button, a car shows up. Like I would have, I think I would have died in my 20s. I think I straight up would have died in my 20s.
You love the drink.
I do.
Yeah.
But like,
but you've toned it down and you think,
oh,
if this was around.
You have to. I mean, I wouldn't have died, but it's like, I feel like the youngsters, they take it for granted.
Yeah.
And like, you know, people that are, and especially people that have like her, she's got some money now.
Yeah.
That exec who's like young and probably just this, no, who are you to deny me anything?
Yeah. So yeah, like the driver's about to kick her out.
Yeah.
And then she freaks out and just starts beating on the driver, and he's got a tape going, and I think pepper sprayed her, or I think it was actually a guy. I think we're saying her, but yeah, I think it was a dude, and then like post the video, and then like he was fired by Taco Bell.
Yeah,
and then I believe I followed up on this story because I have time on my hands, and
as do we all.
Hey, don't at all make fun of yourself for having too much time, because the shit that I YouTubed last night at 2:30 in the morning. We'll get into that in a minute because I want to know what we all YouTube late. All right.
Yeah. So he is now suing. Suing Uber, saying like, you ruined my life, you ruined my job.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And it's like, well, yeah, but you were drunk and you were physically assaulting a guy.
Once you physically assault someone, it's out the window. You don't have any claim on.
No.
It's like Greg Giraldi used to have this bit about people who got fat from McDonald's and then would sue McDonald's.
Yes.
Because like, he's just like, the audacity to wobble your fat, bloated carcass into that ambulance chaser's office, like, look what you did to me. Like, how could I say no?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It was on every corner.
It is. Yeah. It is crazy. Like, and that you almost think too that these Uber, like, I mean, I'm not a big, I'll strike up small talk with an Uber driver but sometimes if they seem like a young, like if they're cool right off the bat, but if they're more often than, like, you know, if they're trying to, I had a guy once who was trying to just pimp me on his whole album, and it was like kind of interesting because he also seemed like he was grinding out here, and he wasn't shoving on me, he just like, he asked what I did, and then he loved comedy, whatever, so we were talking about that, and then so that was all right. But then I've had some dudes that literally just launch into like, Leo, get in the back. He's like, do you want a mint? I'm like, I'm all good, man. He's like, crazy fucking night last night, man. Dude, just fucking three chicks, fucked two of them. One of them had like all sorts of diseases and weird lip sore. I'm like, he just launches in.
Yeah.
Me just responding was opening the gates for him to like give me.
Yeah.
And that's too much.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I wish they kind of feel it out more.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to talk, you don't want to talk. Yeah. But. You know, I also kind of get a little annoyed by, well, first off, like complaining tweets. Who are you complaining to? How am I supposed to fix this? You know what I mean? And I feel that sometimes. Like, this line's taking forever.
Oh, like people that tweet at the airports.
Like, oh, shut up.
Like, there's comedians who tweet at the airlines, and I'm like, I don't think they ever.
And they do. They do. But if they like screwed you over, Kyle Kinane has a long time thing with, he's trying to shut United Airlines down. Like, down. If you go to his Twitter, it's like, that's his bio. It's like, go here to see how to, you know,
are
the
you
worst
serious? Airline.
Yeah, because they screwed him over real bad, and I get it. But, you know, if something goes wrong, they will go like, oh, wait, here's like a free ticket or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, you're
but
right.
But it's based on how many followers you have. It's how much currency you have.
So if Kevin Smith tweets out something to Southwest Airlines, like, free flights for life.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we will remove that second seat so you can fit. Like, he got kicked off that plane for being obese.
Yeah.
But that's like a McDonald's thing. What are you supposed to say? Yeah. Hey, hold on.
Yeah.
They don't have Lazy Boys on this thing? It's the last time you're on a plane, man.
I was expecting a love seat from the back of a 1984 Chevy Astro van.
I figure one of the pilots could leave. I'll sit in that big roomy number up the front.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you need a co-pilot? Do you really? Yeah, but it's that thing so many people complain, like, this Uber driver will not shut up. And I'm just like, I wish you would shut up. Like, I don't care. Tell him.
I know.
You know, be a human being. Go, hey, just look, make it up. Do that thing. I'm like, it's been a rough day, man. Just say that. Even if it hasn't.
Yeah.
Can you
do the do the Seinfeld thing, go, I'm going, I'm deaf.
Okay.
So funny. That would work.
It would.
That would work.
I cannot hear you.
Just
so you know.
All right, we lost six listeners.
I don't care. I'm gonna keep
it was on Seinfeld, damn it.
Yeah.
It was on Seinfeld.
If Uber go ahead.
Like, I didn't even mind on Seinfeld when Kramer called like those Latino people spicy.
Oh yeah.
Because it was like, that was so controversial. It's like, hey, Kramer's an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
He says dumb things.
And by the way, he's about
racism
to say some
dumb.
Much worse shit.
Oh my God.
A few years later.
The real one.
Yeah.
Then he obliterated. Yeah. Everyone forgot about the spicy thing.
Yeah. Maybe that's what he was trying to do. Yeah. Just set it all up. He was foreshadowing.
Yeah. He was trying to he was trying to lube us up for the worst racist one.
I mean, that would understand why he turned to camera and went, "Get used to this." And then I never got that
Did
until
he really
now.
Neither.
Wow. If Uber
he had something white. I guess it was actually a white hood he was pulling over. I thought it was just a napkin that he
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that episode.
He thinks Seinfeld's so popular, he can go full Klan.
Right.
No one's going to care.
No, it's like, no, everyone loves me. That's pretty much however Seinfeld, how popular Seinfeld was how popular Trump is now.
Yeah. Totally.
Where he could say absolutely. Oh. And now he said that Trump has said that in a speech where he's like, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue yep. right in the face and my poll numbers would go up.
Did he really?
He said that in a speech.
On Fifth Avenue, he said. Yeah.
It's like,
Jesus.
Because he's just like,
I
don't care.
He's out of his mind, man. It's
I don't
amazing.
Care.
It's
you just
amazing.
Posted, you just tweeted something.
Oh, he said, he tweeted something actually like that was like, wait, where he said like, something. I can't believe, it was amazing all the support that I took. They said I wouldn't go anywhere, but I took second in Iowa. It's like, dude, all you do is crap on losers.
Yeah.
Second place. Yeah. You're the guy who said second place is the first loser. Like, he's tweeted that several times. And it's like, I'm here to win. But then he's like, all cautious. But now, like, I'm sure, like, his concession speech, his campaign manager had to be like, look, I'm going to quit. If you do not get out there and talk nice, I am going to quit. And you're going to lose it. And he's like, bah. Like, you know, he was like, fine, fine. But, like, now he's tweeting all these kind of passive aggressive. He said, like, I'm not getting the respect, you know, for funding my entire campaign. And I just basically wrote, like, you guys, he's right. This is like something out of a Steinbeck novel. Like, no one's ever had it harder than this billionaire, man. It's hard. You know, like.
He's not going to win.
No.
There's no chance in hell.
It's just, I just don't think, I think he's got a huge following. To me, he's a giant distraction from whatever other societal ills we're having. That's my conspiracy theory thing. Okay. But he's looking at life like it's pro wrestling. And pro wrestling is great, but pro wrestling.
If you know it's pro wrestling.
Right.
And you're like, no, but
he's getting those people that don't know it is that are coming out and going, finally, a maniac. You know, finally somebody, you know, who will bring a Muslim out and shoot him in the face on stage. Like, that's all. And those people are just going to be like, oh, wait, was today the voting day? Oh, shit. You know, like, they're
going
to.
Yeah. Now, when you see something like that going on, do you sort of, do you have any. You'd like, man, I wish I was like back on Mad TV to where we could be going after this guy.
Oh yeah, I mean it's always rife. You know, there was always fun stuff to do. I remember, like, when I was on it, me and Eric Price were the only two white dudes in the whole cast, so we had
so
a
you
lot
had
to
do
to work with.
You had to do everything
a lot
every character
right
every person that's ever been
who,
white ever
and
you
who
had, you had, you had to cover it
and like who were the top. Popular political or pop culture.
At the time, we had like I remember me and Eric were in like a not a fight, but we had this like late night conversation about who's going to do Biden.
Oh,
and he's like, they're giving you everything. Just let me have Biden. And I'm like, all right, take it. Because I'm not going to be a jerk.
Yeah.
And he's also skinnier than I am. Right. You know what I mean? I don't look it. There's so many times where you have like, I'm not even a good impressionist, but like you'll have someone doing a character, and it's like, you don't look like that person at all.
Right.
You're just white and a dude.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like Eric looked much more like him. So it's like, all right.
Who did you get to do that you really dug?
The Andy Griffith. We did like the Andy Griffith show, but we did it like CSI where like horrible murders were happening. We're just all folksy and that'll teach you. Like the drunk got stabbed to death. It was really dark is why I loved it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I loved Mad TV because, man, everybody, you guys were just so much more prepared. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you think?
Well,
okay.
I think so.
Oh, well, I mean, compared to SNL.
Yeah.
Like, they only had a week to write and make the whole thing up.
I don't know, man. I mean, I get, like, that is the, like, you know, the allure of Saturday Night Live. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, some of the Mad TV sketches that just crushed because, like, people were locked in it and they knew their lines, and like I wasn't taken out of it at all.
So the sketch
had the best possible chance in my eyes to be great.
Yeah, and I mean, if only you knew, like the thing I always say is like we'd have these table reads and you had writers from every friggin' school of comedy you could ever imagine, you know, from the lowest to the highest to whatever. And they'd write these amazing sketches and they'd all get thrown out so we could do like a bit about Britney Spears singing, you know, "Oops, I Did It Again," but she microwaved her baby because she's on drugs or whatever. Like, that wasn't a real thing.
I mean, that's pretty good. Yeah. I kind of want to see that sketch now.
It's kind of gold. But just stuff like that, where because that was their, the pop culture thing was their bread and butter.
Yeah, sure. And that's what, the magazine is.
Of course.
It skews pop culture.
No, absolutely. So. I get it. But at the same time, I wish they'd have more. Like, when you see a sketch on Saturday Night Live that has nothing to do with whatever's going on at this
just
time, it's just
yeah.
really funny yeah. by itself. What you call a sketchy sketch, like yeah, a sketch right. for a sketch's sake. Those were the ones I really loved doing, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's, you don't really get to do it, everything you want in this world.
Yeah. Like, no,
well,
sure.
You know, I love when you're talking like a really young comedian. They're like, yeah, well... Like, there was this dude who was just like, I'm going to come to L.A. and, like, if I can just write on, like, a cartoon or something, you know, I'd be fine with that if I could just do sets at night. And I'm like, do you know how fucking hard it is to get a job writing on a cartoon?
Yeah.
Any cartoon.
Yeah.
It is.
Do you know how tough it is to voice a cartoon? I've been auditioning for voiceover for 10 years, dude.
Oh, forget it.
And finally got close between me and somebody for DuckTales and didn't get. That's 10 years.
That's nuts. Yeah.
And, you know, and it doesn't take that long for everybody,
sure.
but to come down here with such like,
yeah.
But I guess you have to come down here too with enough blissful ignorance and delusion.
Yeah. You gotta believe in yourself.
Well,
yeah.
If you look at the odds,
sure.
you would never leave.
Yeah, you gotta be like Han Solo. God. Never tell me the odds.
Yeah,
you gotta be. You know, and there is room for a lot of us. It's like, what are your goals? Do you want to make a living at it? That's possible.
Yeah.
Do you want to be Kevin Hart?
Yeah.
That's probably impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like,
how have your goals changed since when did you get here?
I moved here in 2003.
Okay. Grew up
in Portland, Oregon, but was in Chicago
okay. yeah.
after that. Yeah.
And then you like moved back to Chicago to start comedy?
No, I was born in Chicago. My parents moved to Portland when I was like 3, mm-hmm. grew up there. Went to school in New York, lived in Chicago for a couple years. That's where I became a stand-up.
Gotcha,
and then
gotcha.
I came here.
Gotcha. Okay. So Portland, you have no comedy ties to, other than...
I do now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you started a festival there,
yeah,
right?
Bridgetown Comedy Festival in our 9th year.
Wait, you started that?
Yeah, me and Andy Wood.
That's incredible.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I'm happy for it.
What made you want to... Because there's so many festivals, and what made you want to bring one to Portland?
Well, we were like one of the first grassroots comedy festivals. And Andy, I got sick of the local club in Portland. And so I just started.
Was this Harvey's?
So I just started making a deal with a friend of mine who booked rock shows. The bands would start at 10. And I was like, can I have the 8 to 10 spot? And she was like, sure. And so I just have locals open for me. And Andy was a local that would open for me. And him and a girl named Kimberly Brady were like, hey, should we start our own festival? And I was like, sure. And all I did the first couple of years was ask my famous friends to do it for like less money.
But dude, that's where you got to take advantage of those relationships.
Totally. Yeah. And you know, we try to piggyback it on, okay, you at this theater, you're going to make the same as you'd make on the road, but we'll just slap the Bridgetown name on. It'll get passes and seats. But like since then, now I watch a ton of tape and I know a lot of comedians coming up, and it's
awesome.
It's rad because I still don't make any money off it. I never have. And all I ask for is a plane ticket in and a hotel room. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not staying at my mom's anymore. That was the first three years. Not anymore.
Drew the line.
That's enough.
Wow.
But it really is. It's been described a lot of times as summer camp for comedians.
Like, yeah, that's all like, I've heard about.
You
it.
You probably won't get a career out of it. Same as Just for Laughs. But but it's fun as hell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's how I look at all festivals now.
Yeah.
They're fun.
I think we all. Three of us, judging by how old I think you guys are, I'm a little older than you, but like we all missed that era where you'd go to Just for Laughs and some guy'd be like, here's your development deal, $250,000. You'll at least make a pilot.
Yeah,
right.
That is gone
for 1 year, and if you do nothing, you still have to keep the money.
Still get the money.
You're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you hear stories about that, and then you're like, wow, I really missed
all
that.
Just do what I was doing anyway. Stay on the road.
Yeah.
But make all this money.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So you created this festival without those weren't the intentions. The intentions were to have a great time, to bring a bunch of... Because what people don't realize that when they're... who aren't comedians that go to festivals is that is such a unique experience. You know, I've only been to Montreal once and a couple other festivals, Bumbershoot and stuff, but it's...
Yeah.
I'm Bumbershooting in my hometown of Seattle. I went to that festival... As a patron for probably, I don't know, man, 12 years in a row.
It's like, old.
That was the first concert I ever saw. It was Third Eye Blind in 1998.
Ha.
And I got trampled in a mosh pit.
Wait, there's a mosh pit at Third Eye Blind?
There was...
I guess Seattle people really like that song, Jumper.
They took that Semi-Charmed Life and pumped it up.
It's like the
78 speed.
My buddies, Adam French and Jonathan Stevens, were all the way in the back. We went with a couple girls from our high school, and they were not into it. So we were like, all right, enough trying to like woo these girls with Third Eye Blind. Well, let's make our way all the way to the front of the stage, because it seemed like a lot of fun. The closer we get, the more compact it is. It's hot. I can only imagine it's what... And I know this is like a long stretch of an example and probably like inappropriate, but like when the Jews were shoved. It was so tight and hot. I couldn't breathe. I could not breathe. And it was.
The views of one Adam Ray do not necessarily represent those of the About Last Night podcast.
Granted, there was not Jumper being played in the barracks, but so they. So we're all. So
yeah, pushed
there.
Let's just say all fire codes went out the window.
You got it. So then at one point, people are on top of each other, like sitting on shoulders, and then the shoving, the mosh pit stuff starts. And at one point, I've been wearing my favorite hat at the time, and I get knocked, my hat falls, and then I turn around to like get my hat, and I look down, and then a bunch of people fall, and then it's just gone. And then somebody kicks me in the back, and I fall on the ground.
Oh.
And then people fall on top of me, and I'm at the bottom of a no joke, thought I was not going to get out of this thing.
That is horrifying.
That's a crazy thing to realize
as
a ninth grader to go, I'm going to die at a Third Eye Blind concert on the ground.
Yeah.
And the last thing I say is just going to be, where's my hat or what the fuck? And I'm, you know.
Yeah.
And
so, that's why moshing was meant for like a small club. Like, I remember when I was a kid and still kind of getting into the punk scene, and you'd go mosh and you'd get knocked down, but then someone would grab your arm and pick you up.
Yes.
They wouldn't do anything more for you.
And
they might run into you again.
Yes.
But it's like, it was. Not that it was more communal, but it kind of was. Once like Limp Bizkit came in, it was like, just go nuts. Ignore safety.
Fucking
like,
kill each other.
They might have a song called Ignore Safety.
Well, that's what happened. So some dude pulls a guy off of me.
Yeah.
And then I literally hear at the bottom with my back to the world, there's a guy underneath the guy. And then then I turn around and they pulled me up. So
wow.
I was the guy under the guy that they saved. And it was...
Which to this day is the reason why he can't go to all male orgies,
right?
Because he just has flashbacks.
That is the only reason. But no,
we'll be right back on the Guy Under a Guy podcast.
But
you named it that, not even thinking about what that could mean.
But Bumbershoot is unbelievable, and what I was trying to get at is that the camaraderie between the comics outside of when you get out of your home base, like L.A., New York,
right.
And you're in a Montreal at the Hyatt Hotel or wherever it is. So I can only assume for Bridgetown, like the community that you bring together with everybody is.
It gets bigger and bigger, but now we've been putting the venues, you know, booking venues closer and closer.
Right.
So people can still be in stumbling distance of where they're going to go and stuff. But, you know, I feel like it's great and it's a lot of fun, but I also feel like we book a lot of unknowns. You know, the whole forum does always get like famous people to get asses in seats.
Yep, right.
So they can see the people that would never have anyone come see them because they don't know who they are.
That is such a big-time comic move.
I tell people, look, if I wasn't running this festival, I probably wouldn't book me. Not that often. Every couple of years. But it's just like, you know,
festival staple.
People kind of know who I am, but they also kind of don't. So it kind of fit right in the middle there. So it's like... You know,
you kind of paved the way for other festivals. So many festivals have blossomed because you are kind of like the new kids on the block of comedy festivals.
I'll take it.
And now when you go to things like Moon Tower and other,
definitely.
I feel like they're looking now to showcase younger comics, even things like Bonnaroo, in that comedy tent. Yeah, they'll have four or five headliners that are like monsters. Then they'll have a whole lot of other comics that it's like, hey, let's just discover these guys.
Yeah, and it's a fun break. Like a lot of musical festivals are now phasing out their comedy portions. Like, I don't think Bumbershoot is necessarily doing a lot of comedy anymore.
No way.
They're just starting it. That's what I've heard.
Oh, that's such
a
bummer.
You know, it is a bummer because I know people go to Bonnaroo. Like, it's a big tent.
Yeah,
that's a big stop off for a lot of people that go there that are like, you know, they'll say like, oh, I want to see Metallica.
Right.
And I want to see, Hannibal Buress.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And those tents that tent is air conditioned.
Yes.
And so when you're out there in Tennessee in the summer.
Yeah.
That's a good place to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think it's just kind of part of the comedy boom. And, you know, I feel like a lot of comedians overthink that and think it's like, oh, if I don't get this festival, I'm garbage, or why am I keep getting rejected? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't tell you how much shade we get thrown online where they'd be like, you booked this person and not me. And it's just like, look, man, there's six other people that are producing this with me, and we all watch as much tape as each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's tough to, the way I'm, my point is like, if you're missing a festival, you're missing out on some fun, but you can have fun a lot of other ways.
Yep.
You
know what I mean? Because there's things like heroin.
Right.
Yeah. Or buy a drone.
Exactly where I was going, Brad.
So what Matt is trying to say is if you get rejected
don't
from the festival,
anything,
do
drugs.
Heroin. Yes. Do tons of heroin. But that's that's so great that you bring that that you bring the festival to Portland, because Portland is just such an awesome city.
It's pretty great.
It's fun city.
How is Chicago to start stand-up in?
Amazing. Yeah. Because it's I always kind of use Bill Murray as the ultimate metaphor for that town, because you had a guy who, when he was younger, was always getting fights in bars with his brothers. But, like, they're all very intelligent guys and very funny people. I think, like, the smartest of us are often the funniest. And so I started out with a lot of people that were not only funny, but they were completely honest with me, you know? Mm-hmm. Just like, yeah, I wasn't really feeling that crowd. Why? Because you bombed? Yeah, that's probably why.
You know? You need that straight-up face-to-face feedback when you're going, man.
I mean, we'd get off stage sometimes and be like Mick Betancourt was a guy who gave me, not my first shot, but he was the first guy to be like, hey, you could do this for a living someday. You're funny. And I remember we'd get off stage and be like, whoo, you see what I just ate? Man, like, just because you're going up on these bars where
it was a lot of bar shows in Chicago.
I call a lot of them not like kamikaze bars or dive bomb bars, where you're basically dive bombing the audience, and it's a bad practice. Where people are just in a bar hanging out,
in the bar, and all of a sudden, all right, time for the comedy show.
Mic goes, the spotlight, and everyone's like, God damn it! Fuck. And you thought you were over in the corner. No, you're in the front row.
Right.
You're in front of this guy, you know, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's basically flash mobs, but instead of dancing, someone just throws down a microphone and just starts doing stand-up.
You make the audience the flash mob of disappointment. They're just like, oh, no.
Are they playing? Is flash mob of disappointment playing Bumbershoot next year? Have they been booked? Who did?
They're really tough to book.
They're really tough to
That's
book.
That's a lot of people to fly in.
It is.
Who did you come up with? Stand-up wise,
Kyle Kinane, Kumail Nanjiani, Pete Holmes,
TJ was there.
TJ came after us.
Gotcha.
CJ Sullivan, if you know him, he's a Chicago guy. He's really funny. I'm trying to think.
Was Dion Cole going?
I knew of Dion, but we weren't. I'd never see him.
Right.
I mean, Chicago is insanely, not so much now, but historically insanely segregated. Like,
really?
There's a guy that we looked up to the most named Dwayne Kennedy, who is now a writer. If you can hire Dwayne on your TV show, you're killing it. Like,
awesome.
He's so funny. And he would get on stage and be like, Chicago, come for the food, stay for the segregation.
And like, there you go.
It's just the legacy of old Mayor Daley. You know, Martin Luther King ran up against a bigger wall north of the Mason-Dixon line than anywhere besides, like, Mississippi.
No shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. So there was a lot of huge stuff going down in the south side of Chicago,
right,
where most of the black comics were. There were some in the north, but it's like there are all these black comics who I'd learn about once I came to LA, and we all became friends.
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting. And we also though had such a small group of people, we didn't even know what we were doing. Now, you know, and Hannibal started with Hannibal too. Hannibal was like just this weirdo that was like, he's got a weird bit about a golden arm or a silver arm, and he talks like no one I've ever heard. He's like an alien. And then now that I see he's so big, I'm like, of course he is.
Yeah.
He's incredibly unique and incredibly funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we were just kind of bouncing around getting drunk in bars and saying weird shit on stage, which wasn't the kind of stuff you said in clubs necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
We could still play clubs after a while, and I think Any comic who's like, oh, I don't play comedy clubs, they don't dig me. It's like, well, you're not a comic, man. You know what I mean? That drives me crazy.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, yeah. It'd be kind of like a baseball player going, you know what? I really don't do well on a baseball diamond. If you can make now me and my friends, we play baseball on a trapezoid, and that's where baseball is.
I kill it.
That's where baseball is.
If I can run, what would that be? Six bases? I'm like terrible.
terrible joke.
You're not a baseball diamond. What about a Dustin Diamond?
I mean, sure. I can obviously play with Dustin Diamond as long as
that's he's a smaller, a misshapen diamond that's constantly trying to put his dick in your mouth.
Or a knife in your face.
It's not a fun diamond to play.
No, it's not.
It really is not.
Really dangerous.
Yeah, Parker Brothers will not be making that game anytime soon.
When did you decide to make the move to LA? Or like, was there an event that did it, or was just
it was just me going, all I'm doing is going out every night with friends, and all I'm doing during the day is waiting tables. Mm. And I'm just like, I gotta just go. And this is back when a lot of people were like, oh, don't come to LA unless you have a fully formed script. You have interest from management, you know. And I was like, I don't have any of that, but I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spent years and years just bouncing around and, you know, trying to get people to hire me and stuff and doing all kinds of weird jobs. But
like what? Because, moving here, I have just the utmost respect for people that do that, because you don't realize how big of it to start over. I mean, I'm sure you had some, you got to a point in Chicago where you were like doing well on shows, right? And you developed a little bit of a community.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And now you're coming to a place where you're
starting from scratch.
And to build something out of nothing is so incredibly overwhelming. And so you just have to start trying to like go to these places and try to get a job here just to meet people to.
Well, that's what I love about comedy. It's like you have to prove yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Seinfeld was like, oh, yeah, I'm the famous thing makes them laugh at me for about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, now.
What do you got? Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I just came out and did what I was doing in Chicago, which is just waiting tables and catering. And I was like bartending rich people's houses.
Wow.
Like I would just come with a bag of bar equipment.
How rich?
Set up in their kitchen. The insanely wealthy people, like in like Beverly Park and like Beverly Hills, that was where you'd go with a crew.
Yeah.
But like the ones I went by myself, it was like really rich people in like Hermosa Beach and stuff.
Were they polite?
Oh, they were great. Yeah. But they were also just completely detached from reality. Like, come do shots with us. I'm like, no, I drove here. I can't. I really can't.
They're like, did you really? Come on, buzzkill.
They come and try to give me like extra money to stay. And it's like 3 a.m. And I'm like, I'm not. I gotta go to the point where they're dancing on tables and I have to sneak out because I know
right.
One of these guys is gonna fall off this marble countertop.
Yeah.
And bust
it's on you.
It, not on me, but I got, you know, I'm the only sober one.
Oh,
who else is gonna drive him to the hospital?
Yeah. Shit.
I gotta get out of there.
And Jesus.
And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, next of kin. And you're like, me, technically?
Right.
Like, I've met the guy for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. There's no one around.
Yeah.
So he was dangerously overserved. You were the bartender?
Yeah.
Oh,
God, yeah.
You know?
How was catering? I mean, you were...
It was fine. It was, I mean, like, we just set up in, like, parks and things and do everything from, like, flip burgers to weddings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine, but it was not the kind of thing party down nailed it. Like, when you put on those goofy-ass bow ties... It's just like,
was there material to be derived from these jobs? Or?
No, I got most of my waiting tables material like in Chicago. I didn't really do a lot about I don't even know if I've done this as a joke, but I remember this guy. We were doing a really like a big family barbecue gig in Griffith Park, and he was like, this guy was, he's like, oh, let's get a drink. I was like, cool. And you know when you're around someone for a while and you're like, oh, you're gay as Christmas. For sure. Mm-hmm. You know, you are.
Yep. Yeah.
So we went out and the guy was, you know, very, I hate to use the term effeminate, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yep, sure.
And we go out and we're like having a glass of wine and he starts talking about this girl he's really into. And I'm just like, I got to say something.
Yeah.
And maybe I shouldn't have. But I was like, hey, man, I mean, aren't you gay? And I wish this was like, we could see the video, but you see what I'm going to do? He does this. He puts his hand on his chest, splayed fingers.
Yep.
Like holding his heart like a Southern Belle.
Yeah.
And goes, tell me you're kidding. No joke. And I was like, yeah, man. I was messing around. And like, you know, he laughed, but it was just
psych.
Like, it was just that thing of like, come on, man.
Oh,
you know, and that's got nothing to do with catering, but I just remember that moment of being so awkward.
Oh, God.
But it was like he was doing a bit, like a character.
Yeah.
Like he went home and was like man, I fooled that guy.
Right.
I was doing a pretty sweet, obvious gay dude.
You watch a lot of Oklahoma to get that Southern Belle chest grab.
Oh, my God.
At that point,
he was like Rhett Butler with the house on fire.
Oh, my God. Well done.
Jesus. That's yeah, that there's certain jobs that just
and that guy was Nathan Lane.
He's branched out.
So funny.
Who knew?
Yeah.
When did you write
Casey Kasem? That man, Nathan Lane.
Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. I got a question for you. Do you like taking pictures? Of course you do. Do you like making memories? Of course you do. Have you always wanted to start your own business? Okay, but you just are like, I don't have the money to do it. Well, okay, I got fantastic news. Now you can, okay, you can own your own business that has proven to be a phenomenal success all over this beautiful country of ours, all right, with very little upfront investment. All right, some businesses, you got to throw a lot up front to get it going. Not this business. And the business I'm talking about is Selfie Station. I'm sure you've heard of it, okay? It's one of the coolest fucking companies. I've seen it personally at a bunch of parties, events. I went to one of my friends' brother's bar mitzvah, and he had that shit set up, and the Jews were fucking goo goo gaga over it. All right, Selfie Station is a portable touchscreen photo booth that people and businesses book for all sorts of, like, corporate functions. They use it for trade shows, proms, promotional events, parties, like I said, bar mitzvahs, and so many more things. Selfie Station, basically, it captures the memories that you want to last your entire life. And as soon as you capture them, okay, they can be emailed, texted, printed right there, personalized, and even uploaded right to social media. Social media, social media. You won't believe, okay, how many people will pay you to make your business, Selfie Station, the life of their party, man. It's the easiest income you'll ever earn, and it pays for itself in no time, okay? So start your own business right now, and let Selfie Station be the picture taker, icebreaker, and your money maker. Look, if you want to get a small business going, but you don't have a lot of time and you don't want a lot of risk, this is the opportunity for you, okay? Because the Selfie Station is super easy to use and super easy to set up, okay? Which is means you're going to become a profitable business very quickly if you use the Selfie Station, because you bring the station to the event. It's touchscreen, all right, which is super easy. And once the photos are taken, you can print high-res photos on the spot, or you can post those photos directly, immediately to social media or email them. So, I mean, you know, how many times have you been to a party and you're just like, you take some dope photo and you're like, okay, well, that's on the camera. That's on Greg's super nice camera. So when we get home, we'll upload that to Facebook. And yeah, I know, I'll tag you in it, Gracie. And then the girl walks away and goes, I'm not going to tag that bitch. I hate her. I don't know who invited her. So you get these photos right on the spot, which is the best. It's a great way to make extra cash or find a new line of work, okay? Well, a lot of us are going through these times in our lives where we're like, what do I want to do? I don't know if I want to do it. Dude, when I left Wolverine at Universal Studios Hollywood, I got fired. Thanks for bringing it up. Even I was a little in limbo. Like, what? I'm looking for some new opportunities, you know, before our stand-up really takes off for me. Had I known about Selfie Station, maybe I would have gotten involved. But guess what? You don't have to wait. You can get involved right now. And as a special introductory offer, okay, if you sign up and get this business going right now, you're going to get $500 off the professional package. $500 off, man. All right. All you got to do is go to selfiestationpodcast.com, type in ALN, okay, which means about last night, type in ALN so we can get some credit for it. All right. That's selfiestationpodcast.com, selfiestationpodcast.com, promo code ALN, and start being the fucking party starter that people always thought you were, but you just didn't have the money to do it. All right. Do it. Do it. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. You're an amazing storyteller. The first bit, you've been doing stand-up how long?
About 14 years, 15 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm 9 in, and when I started, I think the first time, there are certain comics that when I feel like you see them the first time, you can become a fan immediately.
Yeah.
When I saw you do your owl story bit.
All right.
I think about, I want to say it was when I feel like it was when I started, which was 9 years ago.
That's about right.
Okay.
Yeah.
At the Improv. And I was just immediately like, your act outs, your voice, like I'm like a big voice guy with stand up, like just like if you're easy to listen to and it's like you're fun, you have a lot of good like variation levels with it,
sure.
And it's just you make it fun to listen to.
Thanks.
And your stories were unbelievable. And that story, is there any way to get any backstory to it?
It was just that bit
is online, right?
Sure. I did that on Letterman.
Is that on Soak Up the Night?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the last one on Soak Up the Night.
Yeah.
And it was just based on someone coming from the Northwest where I grew up and knowing that owls are vicious.
Yeah.
They're vicious animals. And,
you know, there was a whole thing on when Harry Potter got really popular, the movies, like all these kids wanted them for pets. Yeah. And they cut to, and this is, I remember I was watching the news at home stoned and like just flipping around, and they cut to this dude who's the only guys who raise several hours in captivity, and he showed up on the news with a drink in his hand and his face was all scratched up. Like he was like, he's like the sea captain on Jaws. Like one of his owls gonna kill him and that's how he wants to go. Yeah. And it just went into this, I did a bit about him and like, you know, how, and he just said, an owl you raise in captivity will never stop trying to attack you. And I had this bit about, imagine, like when you come home and you're like, hey, it's my dog. When you're an owl, you're like, where is he? Jesus Christ. Like to live with that.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
And that album that had the album on it, Soak Up the Night, I mean, critical hit. Like,
That took you to the next level. Yeah,
that was popular.
I mean, got you on Variety's Top 10 Comics to Watch. Mm-hmm. It got Comedy Central did something. It was like best 10.
Yeah,
best
the 10 nine, comics. The nine of 2009. I think it was. Because then the album came out in like 2010. Well, that was. I mean,
is that like is that a lot of pressure? Like when you read that, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was just. I think when you finally start getting some notice, when it's positive, it's just cathartic, really. Yeah. I can't imagine. It wasn't like let's say Jennifer Lawrence. Like she did that movie Winter's Bone, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, will you play Katniss in Hunger Games? And she had this moment where she's like, I don't really want to. I don't want to be that famous, but you can't say no. So it wasn't anything like that where it was just where someone very young gets something fucking like, boom!
Right,
just blowing up. Right, and they don't have any privacy, and half the world hates them, half the world loves them.
Right,
like that's just insane to me. Mm-hmm. It was just to me. It was just like oh, good, maybe I can play more clubs now.
Yep,
you know that's all it was. And also, it was nice to get a little dap. You know, after a little while.
Grinding like that
a little bit.
You need that validation, man. You need those like peppered in to just like make the whole grind of the.
And it's worth like my second one, which became a special, I like, but I don't like it as much as that album. But then
because you had 6 years.
That's exactly like
to write
so
that
long
first album,
so long,
and then and then you had a year and a half, 2 years to write the second album.
Yeah. So, but it's like I like to just keep putting stuff out and not
because you're writing all the time.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
trying.
What's your process? I mean, are you just
I always have notepads laying around that I'll just carry around with me, and if something strikes me as funny, I'll write it down. And more often than not, I'm already doing jokes on stage. I'll remember that, and then I'll just throw it in and see. You know, it's that thing. You're like, what do you guys think of this?
Yeah,
you know,
sometimes
it's like throw that away. And you're like, all right, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you just have that little thought.
Do you enjoy observational stuff more now that you've like really honed in on your point of view, or personal stories?
Personal stories more, but I do like sometimes observational. People kind of crap on observational comedy and they say like all comics do it, but I like seeing a comic with a really unique point of view.
Yeah,
point something out.
And
you know, I think probably Bill Burr is like the best at that.
Oh, the best,
because you know him just talking about who is the. The Lakers owner that
Sterling was the
Don Sterling
Clippers owner.
And he was just describing,
just don't put it on Instagram.
Yeah. Like, I just think he's like a radical thinker.
Yeah,
like what?
Yeah,
I
remember when that whole thing happened. I had written a bit about Don Sterling. I was really excited about it, and then literally like that night, I saw Burr do his thing. I'm like, well, nope,
shoot,
scrap mine.
Oh, that sucks.
I mean, you know what? But at the same time, you see guys like that, and I don't know why anyone would rip on like observational comedy, because hell, like Brian Regan can take simplest minutia of life and just expand on it and make it so funny and make you look at it like you've never seen it before.
To me, that like him doing that live at Radio City Music Hall and just talking about stuff that you don't even think about and just crushing. It's like that's why he's the best.
Right. Yeah.
You know? Because he's not doing something that is going to make people stand up and go, oh, my God, yes, finally. You know,
right. He said it.
You know,
No one's going we've been saying how weird it is to say you two back to someone, and finally someone put it out there.
Yeah, right?
Like, no, but he's always going to be good.
Yeah.
Always going to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to have a wasted ticket if you go see Brian Regan.
Did you when Big Dumb Animal? That was a couple years.
Like,
this past year,
the special came out just this past 15.
That's right,
2015.
So good.
Thanks.
I also really love. Where'd you shoot that, by the way?
The Bell House in Brooklyn.
That looked to me like I hopefully will do an hour in the next couple years. At least that's the goal.
Yeah.
And seeing that the size and like the set and like just the personal touch you put on everything with the
the taxidermied animals.
Yeah, dude, just the opening shots of them was so. I mean, hey, I also like Brad just shot his second hour special and in a big theater.
That's awesome, by the way. I watched that. It's really great.
It's all right. He crushed it, whatever. But like, it was a big, beautiful theater, and that also was dope to me. But then seeing yours, I was like, and so it really is, it's starting to make me think, like, God, what do I want to, because I love, like, the venue you played seemed, like, I love those venues, but then also, like, I love the big theaters, but it's like, what is, so.
The thing is, the thing not to overthink is where you're doing it, you know? Unless you're in some place that has, you know, a small amount of seats and massive high ceilings, like something that wouldn't be conducive for comedy.
Yeah, right.
You know, but yeah, it's really up to, I mean, that was just a venue that the producer I was working with had locked in already. And and we're like,
it's like, hey, do you want to do yours
and
here?
I love that venue. And you, so okay, I was like, great.
It's great. How many seats?
I think it's maybe 300 to 400.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of clubs I've been doing that are about that size that I love because of the energy that it can in someone come back like that, but also I love the intimacy because I do a good chunk of crowd work that and I like to be right up on people, and you know, sometimes a theater you can have a little bit more of a gap that maybe feels like it's less, but even like the theater Brad did it, like the people weren't so far back that if you want to do some crowd work
could have done it
for
sure.
And then this special is available on Netflix, just want the
wants to pull it up. Yep,
yeah, and look for the guy who's hugging a bear.
That's right.
But I want to know from that.
That's
like,
when you know you got it.
Yep, that's it.
But
hugging a bear.
You talked about your folks and your dad picking up old women and driving them to shop.
Yeah, on the street from a retirement home.
Right.
Hey, want to shop?
Because that makes it less creepy.
Yeah. Well, slightly.
The way that you commented even on that in the special, I can't remember the exact line, but it was very funny. But so how, I mean, did you know he's been doing that for a while?
Well, it's funny because I say he used a van, and he's like, he saw me do it. He was like, I didn't use a van. It's a car.
That's his complaint?
Yeah. Right? I remember I learned about that because my dad does all this charity work, and I try to make this into a bit, but it's just kind of this maybe funny to me. But he was like, he was doing hospice work and still does.
Oh man!
And yeah, and I was like, what did you do today, Dad? And it, typical men of that generation, men of small of little words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you do today, Dad? Like, hung out with this guy. All right. Who? His name's Dan. He's dying. What? Your father does hospice. Why don't you just say you're doing hospice? Like you're hanging out with a dead man in an alley? Just say that.
Yeah.
And so I came home from, if I was visiting, and my and I was like, where's Dad? And my mom goes, oh, he's with his ladies. And I'm like, what? And she's talking about he drives a car to retirement home and drives the old ladies to go shopping and then takes them back.
If you started off by saying he's with his ladies, your mind may go to some inappropriate places.
And she did. Yeah. And I was like, what is happening?
Has he always been that generous? I mean, your parents, the Bronzers, are pretty sweet people.
They help run a food bank, and they've always, like, growing up, they always deliver food to, like, poor houses through their church and stuff. But once my dad
got
retired.
They're better than us. We get it.
That's my point.
Okay.
Hear the door open and close. He just left. That was his whole point? What an asshole.
I didn't even plug his Twitter.
It really came down to my dad retired and just got stir crazy. It was like, I got to do something. I'm just bored.
I can't imagine that time and place as a human being. Like, what did he do prior to that?
He was a high school administrator. He was a principal and a vice principal.
Yeah, sure. So you're exhausted at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, how many, I mean.
Yeah.
At your school?
No, like he was actually the disciplinarian at the middle school I went to, but he left when I got there.
Thank God.
Because it just wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
But I do remember he had like the shoebox full of weapons. When I was a kid, I'd come visit him, and he'd be like, look at this. And it just like nunchucks and knives.
Things that kids brought?
Yeah. That he confiscated. All confiscated stuff.
It's like, prison contraband.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What kid is bringing nunchucks to school?
I don't know. Some crazy kid.
Little kid named Michelangelo. they had to get
a little
smart.
Turtle.
Yeah. You know, they had to go to school.
But
what, you don't want turtles in schools, Adam?
I mean,
is that your possession?
Not with
weapons.
They're
really good at
them.
Well, that's why you confiscate them.
That's right.
Then they can get back to learning.
He did say though, like he still keeps in touch with the younger guys that he used to work with that do that job now, and he's like,
man.
He's like, yeah, they're confiscating guns. He's like, in my day,
Just knives.
Oh.
Like, oh, okay. Wistful. Remember the days of knives?
Isn't it fucked up, sure though, nice. Man, that was like a better time?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, insane. These are middle school kids.
Yeah.
They weren't going to stab anyone.
No, they brought it for effect and intimidation.
Like, there's no, despite what all the 80s movies show us, no kids would use, Chinese stars to throw at each other. Those are impossible to make work.
Yeah,
imagine. They tried so hard, could not make it stick in anything.
Yeah, I mean, if you were about to fight a guy and he pulls out like three Chinese stars, you're like, okay, I'm going to win this fight because there's
or
no
I'm
way.
I'm going to die. Either
one,
way.
One of the
one
other.
One of the two.
I'm not going to be casual.
The pie chart is 80% win. 80-90%.
But that 20% death.
Careful.
Like. It's not like, oh, he may break my leg, he may knock me unconscious, like,
no.
Death.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's so true.
Take your chances.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say.
That's like playing the hard eight and craps.
Well, it's like when I get mad at someone enough to fight them and like, oh, this is going to happen, like, they know there's like 90% chance they're going to win, but man, if that 10% chance...
You get them down there.
Oh, it's done. Your life is over.
You're over.
You're not going to be able to brag. You're not going to be able to tell that story. Ever. Like, some guys can tell, like, the I got beat up stories and they're still cool.
Yeah.
You can't say that I got beat up by a midget and still be like, wait, what, where's everybody going? Wait, no, come, no, yeah. There's more.
No.
I had the flu.
I'm done other things.
No,
are your folks funny? Like, where do you, you're an only child, yeah?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
How was that growing up?
Oh, it was, I mean, it sure built my ego up, for sure. But I always say, like, when you have siblings, you have someone to blame things on.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
If a lamp was broken, you know, we did it. You know, so you always, you never got away with anything.
Yeah.
But they both came from big families. I think they wanted just one kid.
They wanted
like,
the opposite
it.
Of what they mm-hmm. experienced.
Yeah, because they saw people every single moment of every single day devoted to this massive brood.
Yeah.
You know, my dad had six brothers and three sisters, and his mom died young, and then my grandpa would just go to the local bar, and he married the cocktail waitress, and that's how I got my grandma Sunday. That's the only grandma I knew on my father's side. But it was just, you know, like, it was this thing where, like, you got nine kids, and they'd hear a Zippo lighter. Chick, chick. They'd hear it click in the morning, and that was like, Dad's up. Everyone get up.
Oh,
they just
shit.
Knew, like, get, you know, and it was almost
wow.
By having this massive level of distance, you keep your kids disciplined. But it's like, that just sounds so horrible to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely went in the opposite direction. Were they supportive of your comedy? Were they cool?
Yeah. I mean, there was a time where it kind of was like a little scary. I think I'm just really lucky. I found comedy because I started out when I was younger as just like, I'm going to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, yeah. Okay, maybe you can do that, but...
Who's your favorite? Matt Damon's friend?
Yeah.
What? Do you know what movies are?
Yeah, right. Oh, no, his friend is doing it, runs lines with him. It's really good.
Yeah.
But it's just, I feel like even if you're an actor, you have to also write. You have to also try to produce stuff or something.
Yeah.
Do a podcast.
Yes.
Like, people that are just like, I'm just in L.A. waiting.
Jesus.
You're boned. Luck. You're boned. It's not going to work out for you.
Because you're literally, like, what are you waiting for? The vice president of show business just to call your cell phone and just be like, hello, this is the vice president of show business. We've decided to make you a star.
Yeah.
Like, oh, finally. Yeah. No, that's not going to happen.
Hopefully you have a script and a funny wig.
Yeah.
So when you moved out here, they were just like, fuck yeah, man, go for it. Like, you've shown us enough that you're funny.
Well, they knew I was like, you know, either going to keep waiting tables, bartending, or whatever. But, like, it was nice when I started doing little commercials and things like that. And just they're just like, oh, okay, he's doing fine.
He's doing something.
What was your first commercial?
Well, what was my first? There was a time in the first couple of years I was here that I did a good number of stupid dads. You know,
that's
the guy
awesome.
That's just lost in the grocery store. Where's the baby? I set the laundry on fire. Men, so stupid. Tide detergent.
Oh my god!
So easy, even men can use it.
Yeah,
yeah. Just that's like the subtitle of every commercial.
I think the first thing I booked was a SpongeBob SquarePants Slurpee ad. Where we're looking through a glass-bottom boat, and we saw SpongeBob swim by.
That's amazing.
I didn't even say anything. I made a face like, whoa, you know? And I remember this kid.
How did you prepare for that?
Is that a cartoon under there? Yeah. That's so great.
He's going to kill us. Cut. Do you know who SpongeBob is?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sponge, and we're in the water, so he's going to soak up all the water, and then we're going to be stuck, right? And then that's when he eats us? That's who SpongeBob is?
Right, right. Yeah.
Dude, so funny.
Am I wrong?
He soaks up our blood.
Yeah. Those commercial auditions can be so, like, when they let you improvise, I went into an Olive Garden commercial one time hungover, and I was wearing a Reading Rainbow t-shirt with a sport coat.
I wish you were wearing just, like, a fucking wife beater with just grease stains on it. And be like, hey, and just play it up.
Just
so,
like Uber
that's
Italian.
Not the character
pizza,
we want.
Pizza, Buca di Beppo. You're saying other restaurants, man, and items we don't sell.
That'd be so great.
Yeah, but I was so hungover. God. And like just kept improvising weird shit. And yeah. The guy, like he was like, have some small talk. And then Beth, you'll say the first line about how good the salad is. And I open by, I go, man, has anyone seen Jurassic Park 2? Just came out on DVD. And the guy goes, cut. He goes, that has nothing to do with what is happening.
But that's small talk. That's actual small
like,
talk.
What are you talking
you
about?
You took the
like,
direction.
Yeah, hey, you yeah. say like, yeah, you ask about movies
they
and
didn't,
stuff.
Yeah, they didn't bring, they didn't bring Laura Dern back. Thoughts?
Discuss.
When I got Letterman, and I just stopped doing them. I just stopped doing commercials.
For
like,
sure.
I cut myself off from like, I would have made a lot more money, but it was mm-hmm. just like, I just had to make the decision of like, oh, I'm on the road now. I'm paying my rent with club money.
Right.
Then great. I don't need to do these. I don't need to sit in that room anymore.
For 4 hours to go take a chunk out. Well, you drive to Santa Monica, that takes an hour and change, and then you wait for an hour and change, and then more than an hour and change to get back. I mean, that is a commitment on all levels.
And brutal. Literally for them, I think I may have said something like this on the podcast before, but commercial auditions, they don't need you there.
No.
They don't. They could look at a picture and be like, that guy.
Yeah, or you do it. You send them a tape.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to give you amazing direction.
No, their direction more often than not is. I remember one time I got like the direction was, all right, lift these boxes, these imaginary boxes from the lower shelf to the high shelf. And first of all, I was like, I'm a dwarf. I don't know if there's a high shelf here. And then they're like, no, but like whatever the next shelf is. And I'm like, okay. So and you start doing it, and you're like, is there any way that I could lift this box, this imaginary box, up to the second shelf to make the director go, oh, brilliant?
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not going to happen.
Yes.
There's nothing you can get from that audition that you can't get from just a video on an iPad now.
Oh, absolutely.
Just like, why do they make you do that? So that totally makes sense. You would do something like stand-up where it's more rewarding. There's more like if you go to do a gig somewhere, you will be paid,
mm-hmm.
you know, guaranteed.
Right.
Not like you got to compete with like 40 other stand-ups that look and sound like you and then,
totally.
And then maybe
oh
you
my
get paid.
God, yeah. Yeah. It's flooded. They never run out of people, so they're mm-hmm. fine. And I think it's better at a certain point to just kind of like, you know, price yourself out, man. Yeah. Just if you're doing okay, you don't have to do this stuff anymore. Too many people stay in that commercial world,
yeah.
and that's all they do, and that's all they're known for.
Right.
You know?
And it's – with very few exceptions, there's very few stand-ups that when they can go on the road and be like, come see this guy do stand-up because you saw him do this commercial. Like, he's the Domino's guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's not too many people are coming out to see the Domino's guy.
No, yeah.
Can you break down that Letterman experience? I mean, getting the call. I mean, this you did it at what year?
I was the last guest of 2008.
Okay.
So
I mean, dude, he's still in full effect at this point.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah. And anyone who knows, like, you know, you've done late night sets. Mm-hmm. It's like where, you know, here's your date. Ah, I had to move it. Here's your date. Yep, sorry.
Oh, I got bumped from Ferguson by Morgan Freeman.
Who's that?
I was very upset.
Yeah. It's annoying. It's horrifying.
So you got moved a bunch. So
a couple. Not bad. Yeah. But then, you know, the thing about Letterman is he only ever had two guests. Mm-hmm. So it was like me and Tracy Morgan.
Awesome.
So, yeah. But I think Tracy Morgan was getting a little too nuts, and David was just like, have the comedian hang out, you know? So, I mean, thankfully I had a good set too.
Yeah,
and
then
he called me over to the couch.
What?
And I just told him this story about Portland, and he laughed. And that was that thing of like making that dude laugh.
Come on.
And him just being like, all right, this is great. And mm-hmm. then the thing with Letterman is when they're like, all right, and we're clear. And they, when they're done, they mm-hmm. cut it. And then they're like, all right, no one move. And David gets up and walks up the stairs to his office. The door closes. Like, all right, guys. And then you can get up. You have to stay in your chair.
What?
You can't. Wow. Well, because he doesn't want anyone coming up to him. He doesn't want anyone from the audience to rush him. He just wants, he's a very private guy. But they were like, all right, and we're out. Everyone hold tight. And Letterman just goes, I hear his hand just comes and grabs my hand and goes, you're very funny, and shook my hand and walked up the stairs.
That's like, amazing.
So that was like, that still has not been topped.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a pretty fun career, but that's like.
Was he your guy? I mean.
Certainly one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I am attracted to men. No, I'm attracted to performers and acts that are like usually different than me, that are doing stuff different than me.
Yeah.
And like that guy just had such brass balls.
Yeah.
Like if I were hosting a talk show, I doubt I would take someone on the air, take them on and be like, you know what? You're an idiot. But he would do that, you know, and say it in such interesting ways.
Oh, one of my favorite Letterman interviews of all time was when he had Paris Hilton on.
Yes.
And he just would not. She was there to promote something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And he would not get off of the sex tape.
Yeah.
Like he was just like, so when the sex tape comes out.
She's like, hey, back to my perfume called like, Beaver Twat or whatever.
You're like, okay, so were you wearing the perfume when you made the sex tape?
Perfume.
Unicorn pussy.
Yeah. And like he you knew it's almost like every member of that audience knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Paris.
Right. Yeah.
Like she couldn't tell what he was doing. And it was so funny.
He had Jerry Springer on, and you know, I think Jerry Springer is probably not a bad guy.
No,
he's like I've heard him on WTF once. It was this, all right, this guy's lived a funny life.
Yeah.
And when he was the mayor of St. Louis, he wrote a check to a prostitute. And he's famous for that now, but it's something he never wants to talk about. Now he's probably more cool about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure his publicist was like, just have Mr. Letterman not ask about that. And they were like, okay. You know, like, who are you? Like,
yeah.
Who are you?
Yeah.
So he gets on there, and the first thing he says to him is like, so you wrote a check to a prostitute, huh? And Springer's face just falls, and he just gets so passive-aggressive and goes, I guess I made a mistake. I thought I was in the David Letterman show. And David Letterman goes, guess again, Pepe. I don't even know what that means. But it's such a fast whoopow.
Yeah.
Such a bit of kendo.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like block the punch, punch in the face.
That move's not even in
Pepe.
Street Fighter.
Yeah.
You can't even come back from that. You're stuck there. And I think they know too, you're trapped. When you come out there, it's like, oh, you're going to get up and walk off the set? Because that's even bigger ratings.
Yeah.
And you're even, now you're an asshole.
You're clowning yourself.
Yeah.
By not. It's just this court of honesty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just like,
And he's judge, jury, and most certainly executioner.
Yeah, but at the same time, not like, I'm going to yell in your face. That's how I get ratings. It's just like, no, I'm just going to expose this truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And by the way, didn't say anything false.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Said, hey.
Exactly.
Say, we're going to check your prostitute.
He had Rush Limbaugh on, and he was like, what is it? Do you ever just wake up in the middle of the night and just say, I am just full of nothing but hot gas? Hot gas, not air.
Yeah.
Just said he was a balloon made of farts. It's just,
why doesn't Wham-O release that toy? Balloon made of farts. Come on.
Fart balloon?
Come on, Wham-O.
I mean, we get it. You had the slip and slide.
Oh,
it's you've ridden that coattails for a while.
Adorable little girl holding a red balloon. As soon as you turn around, hey, you farted, mister. I didn't. Hey, whose kid is this?
Do you remember there was a fart machine at one point? I don't know what company made it.
A remote control fart machine.
Leslie Nielsen carried one until his death, he said, from Naked Gun.
Oh, my God.
He had it in his jacket all the time. And he said, he's like, you just press it if you're hanging out with him. Like, hey, what? And he said, if he's in a bar with his wife and two guys are about to fight, he just gets between them and goes, hey, guys, what's the problem? And it's like, one starts laughing, other guy starts laughing, fight over.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Dude, farts are the constant diffuser of confrontations.
No matter how mad you are.
It really is true.
Like, if Leslie Nielsen comes up with a serious doctor from the 50s man face, and a fart comes out of him, there's no way you're going to fight that person.
I've said this before on this podcast and just in life situations. If I get to a point where I don't find farts funny, take me out.
Yeah.
End it for me or I'll end it myself.
Oh, my God.
Whether I'm in an elevator or, you know, or around an old person who just doesn't know any, like my grandpa, rest in peace, like he used to just fart and have no clue that he was even farting. And that was the funniest shit ever to me because I would look at him and just stare at him. And then he would finally like recognize me staring and look at me and be like, and then look at me and just smile and go, I'm so glad you're here visiting. And I would just be like, you have no idea that you just dropped one of the worst human smells in the history of the world.
Yeah, it's.
or especially when someone just owns it in public.
That's the best.
That's a mode of, that's a badge of honor. That's,
yeah.
That's,
yeah.
That's
really, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Really not incredible. Enough people are owning up to farts.
Yeah.
No. And I think that's Oprah's next book.
Well, we talked about
own your farts. Yeah. Just her with her eyes closed, just inhaling.
Well, it's true. You talk about deal breaker for dude friendships, but like, yeah, if somebody like owns a fart immediately, I'm like, okay, cool. This guy's straight up.
Yeah, right.
He's
yeah,
not
we
gonna
can hang out.
Yeah,
we can do this. Yeah.
He's not going to blame me at some point.
Yeah. So now, like, now that the special big dumb animal is out, now are you like writing the next one? Or
yeah.
you?
I got a.
We're also on a TV show.
A new. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We talk about that.
Sure.
Yeah. Agent X.
Agent Carter. But. I like Agent X better.
I was going to say Coach Carter, yeah. So I guess that
Agent
was...
Coach Carter.
Agent Carter on ABC.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's part of the Marvel Universe.
Correct.
And it's basically the character from Captain America that yes. he fell in love with, but mm-hmm. then he got frozen.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
But then what happened to Agent Carter? There well, find out on ABC.
Go to the 40s.
Yeah.
It's fun. I'm basically like the Q, like from James Bond. Like I make gadgets for
so
the team.
So awesome, yeah.
And it's fun because I get to play this... guy who pretty much has Asperger's. He says really rude stuff mm-hmm. and, you know, wants to be a secret agent but is not. He, like, almost fouls up missions.
Yeah.
So it's comic relief. And I was on vacation with my girlfriend, and they were like, oh, do you want this? They want to do this part, but it's just the role of scientist. And I'm like, you never see this guy again. And then they sent me the sides, and it's just him saying to them, like I know what this chemical compound is you found with the dead body, but like, why don't you guys ever ask me out for drinks? And they're all just like, wait, what? We do? Yeah. And they're like, no, man. No, never. Like this lonely mm-hmm. fucking
that's
nerd.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, yeah, I got it. So I did that. And the writers just kept putting me in stuff, which
that's
is
so
great.
Dude, that's a
love story.
That doesn't happen all the time.
No.
Where
no.
you come in like for a smaller part and then they're just like, hey, you're dope and you're making what mm-hmm. we write doper. So
yeah.
Yeah, and just the fact that it's in something like the Marvel universe
oh, yeah.
to where now like you're
proven franchise,
you're a character, like you're yeah. you're something where nerds can talk about you,
yeah,
and like get together and be like, oh, well, it was this guy, he wasn't in the comics.
Well, it's exactly. Well, it's funny because like I went to this screening and this guy Reggie who plays Dr. Wilkes, who is on there, his wife made him, like, found the comic that his character was in. Mm-hmm. He was, like, a scientist that just got blown up in one issue or something
yeah,
like that.
Okay.
And they put it on a shirt for him, and I was like, oh, my God. And it was, like, a comic from, like, the 50s or something.
Wow.
I was like, that is so badass. Like, my guy is completely made up. He's not yeah. any, you know... comic book, but I, you know, you wouldn't have a Dr. Aloysius Samberly in a comic book. Like, that's...
but you know what? Those are my favorite types of stories when... people are written in for a line, a character,
uh-huh.
like a single episode.
Right.
Like, hell, a friend of the podcast, Jaleel White. Steve Urkel yeah. was a one-off.
Yeah. Wow.
I was a guest star.
Yeah. I didn't even know that.
A guest star, dude.
Oh, my God.
And he just crushed it, and they were like, oh, I'll bring him back again, and again, to now all of a sudden.
And now you have Urkelos.
It was. Yeah, yeah. Urkelos.
So, I mean, not that you're going to have Aloysius Crunch,
no.
but.
I mean,
probably not.
Not with that attitude, but I mean, man.
It's just so cool that when you hear people that were brought in just for a one-off.
Totally.
And
yeah.
And then they. Do it really well, and people respond well to it. I mean,
yeah.
Now being in a comic book TV show, do you get people like on Twitter hitting you up, like
it's
who
more,
have
it's
crazy
more people,
questions?
Like I've only been in one so far, but then they the next two I'm not in, and then but I'm in the rest of the season.
Okay.
So it maybe that'll snowball more, but
yeah,
it's more people that are just like, hey, did I see, you know, that comedian, you know, like
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Yep.
It's more. It's not like, wow, who's this person that's so
sure.
good in this comic book show or whatever,
right.
sure.
you know. But
yeah.
you know, you never know. It just was like fun to play in that world. I remember, you know, T.J. Miller had a great quote in an interview where he was like, "People think us comedians are doing comedy to get in TV and movies." He's like, "No, we do TV and movies so more people come to our
yeah.
shows."
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely true. Yeah.
It's just like, you know, it's
this is just so we can keep fueling mm-hmm. this hobby that we have
yeah.
that somehow is paying us.
Yeah, the other stuff is just gravy. The other
yeah.
stuff, like doing Agent Carter, like that. To me, that was just like, oh, hey, scratch ticket. It won me some money.
Cool.
Great.
But you like acting.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, that's where I started out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, growing up and stuff. But I said it before, I'll say it again. Like, I'm so lucky that I've found comedy. And that's because it's just so much more my wheelhouse
right.
than, you know, just even just
you know, I go to an acting coach for auditions and stuff, but like being in acting classes, it's like, oh my God. You know?
Yeah.
After it's, you do comedy where you get to do anything you want.
It is yeah. the best.
And you have to, you don't have someone across from you going, I didn't see the thought right there in that line
yeah.
you had.
Like, yeah.
I don't care what you saw.
Well, and I try to explain to people that, yes, you may not get the breaks that you feel you deserve. Yeah. Yes, other people may jump ahead of you and you might think that's unfair. But if you are funny, and yeah. you're doing comedy, you will work.
Yeah.
You will absolutely work.
Absolutely.
You will never, whether it be on a, whether it be touring clubs, whether it be doing theaters, whether it be doing cruise ships, whether it be doing corporates, like, you will work.
Right.
In some way, shape, or form. So why not go into that industry that's where you could be good and succeed rather than acting where it's like you need a whole lot of, like, you
yeah.
need some breaks, need some luck.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. If mm-hmm. you're funny enough and you give your life to it, then it's going to happen.
Yeah, like you're just going to keep working. I mean, yeah, sure, you may not reach Kevin Hart status like we talked, but yeah, you'll work clubs and you'll keep working and you'll keep getting a paycheck.
And someone might like your set and hire you as a writer on a show.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Like it does happen. But it is funny when that. I think the operative word there is funny. Mm-hmm. And it, like, I was thinking about this the other day, and this is going to sound probably real harsh, but every once in a while you see someone and you're just like, man, when growing up, did anyone ever go, hey, you're funny? Ever once in your life? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think because comedy is not only exploded,
yeah.
it's just become incredibly common. There are comedy scenes in every single town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And listen, I'm not going to sit here and go, I don't have anyone particular in mind right now. Mm-hmm. I'll say that right now. But you know, it does get to the thing where people are just like, yeah, I'd do it. Whatever. It's nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and it's like all you're doing is getting drunk and making your friends laugh.
Yep.
And you're doing a spectacle.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that thing.
Do that on stage in front of people that have paid to come.
Right.
Yeah.
That are sacrificing their Friday night, to the 9-to-5 crowd is a very valuable yeah. thing.
So you're saying you think it's gotten so popular and so that people who just have like kind of like little bits and skills of like getting drunk and making some people laugh, then immediately equate that to, yeah, and then they do stand up once or twice.
Well, it's just you have people doing stand up that just. And I'm not talking about people that are starting out. People that have been doing it like a long time, and
yeah.
it's still just like, it's like you're not that,
not clicking,
not clicking.
Yeah,
you know. For some people, maybe like there was a point where I remember a couple people were like performance artists, and that's so easy to make fun of. I'm not even knocking it.
Yeah,
but you know, and it is definitely an art. I've seen some really amazing performance artists, but like performance artists, and like no one's coming to their shows. They're like, I'm a comedian now. And you're like, no, you're not.
No,
you're not.
No.
You're just being weird.
It's funny because we don't have like, in the world of comedy, you don't like, your average person can't say, I'm a professional basketball player. Because
right.
you would look at him and say, well, but you're not in the NBA.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
you're not a professional basketball player. but like, comedy, you can do 3 open mics and tell everyone you're a comedian. And
yes.
they'll go like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And they just go right, like there's no level that you've, like, okay, now you are a comedian. Now
right.
you have officially landed and you can tell your friends you're
yeah.
a comedian.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
Exactly. Anyone can say they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah, for people that make YouTube videos, they go, well, I'm a comedian. I do YouTube videos every week and I rant about stuff. I rant about what I saw in the grocery store. That's my thing. And
yeah.
Like,
hey, I made pasta last night. I'm a chef.
Hey, Chef Boyardee.
I will never not support that product. To the point to
and
where...
And plus, that chef has proved himself. If you don't like the product, he's very popular.
He has proved himself.
His name does not exist in any Italian area of the language.
You know, I wrote a sketch, and I still should make it, like, probably 6 years ago, which was like a VH1 Behind the Music on Chef Boyardee, or like a Where Are They Now? Because... And quite honestly, people don't care enough to have it be a full length feature. I think
yep.
that goes without saying.
Right, right.
But like,
oh ye of little faith.
I know. For someone who loves it as much, but
he's
like
an international treasure.
Come on,
not national.
There are actual facts about like where he started and like the story about how he did like create this pasta and like working in this kitchen and then like, you know, would make it and then like go up to people and be like, what do you think of this? And like yeah. fucking, you know.
My favorite quote by him. It only tastes good if you're a baby or drunk.
Is that real?
No. That's in my mind.
I got
like when you're a kid, you're like, beefaroni.
You know what, though?
Or when you're hammered, you're like, oh my God, SpaghettiOs.
So, you know what? But see, now you will be in the, maybe it's a documentary, and we just interview people that were around or that like, you know, we're, you know, famous comics.
Just a bunch of chefs talking so much shit. They hate him.
Yeah.
You just hired a bunch of old people to wear chef whites, and they're just like, oh. Just let him improvise about how much they
But then you get
him.
Guys like you.
He's so garbage, but he blew up. But he blew up.
Yeah, maybe he was almost like the Zuckerberg. Maybe he almost even did some shady shit. But yeah. Then I feel like in the sketch I even wrote that, like, you know, he interviewed his brother who's like, you know, there were tougher times. Like, yeah. He would, you know, when Beefaroni came out, like, then there was the cocaine and the strippers and the, you know, like, he was spiraled out of control. He was pouring. He was eating beefaroni or stripper's butts, you know, just all sorts of like crazy shit.
You know, like ravioli, that's an Italian word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beefaroni.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not quite. Has that bit
I
already.
Think, I mean, but
like,
I think,
know, he added, yeah. He just shoved beef, an English word, into a roni.
Yeah.
Which is, they like Italians are just trying to beat the shit out of
oh, yeah,
him,
dude.
Chasing him down alleys.
Yeah.
Just hating. Oh, my God. Matt, thank you so much for coming
on. Dude, this
was
so much fun.
Yeah, this was a blast.
This is like just I love shows like this where you're just kind of shooting the shit with other funny people. With
it's the best.
Comics.
Yeah. And, you know, and quite honestly, it's like, you know, we've all had like, you know, conversations at clubs, but it's like, man, that's like my favorite thing about this podcast is that like so much of this stuff, like, you're also everyone's always so on the move too.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
If everyone were to bring that stuff genuinely up about like your folks at a comedy club, we would get into it. But then like probably as soon as you would get to a point to where you would like
some asshole friend of ours
with no tact, which is like one of my biggest pet peeves when you see people talking that are like locked in a conversation and someone just walks up with like their hand extended for like a high five,
yeah,
and you're,
yeah,
like, can you wait fucking 9 seconds or, yeah, a minute?
Did you bring the weed?
Yeah.
Get out of here, man.
This is a complete side note. You talk about this. I saw this happen. I was in Denver this past weekend and at a bar after the show, and there was a couple breaking up. There was a couple at the bar breaking
they
up.
They were at your show.
They were at my show, and then they went to the bar afterward, and they're breaking up at my like at this bar, and the girl is crying, and she's yelling at the guy like, "You never listen, and you never support me." And then, like, as they're doing this, the guy's friend who also was at the show walks up and like goes, "What's up, dude? Oh man, that guy was so funny." And like now he's there, he's just standing there, and you see the guy kind of staring at him like, "Are you gonna
you didn't notice?" Christine's wet face, and it's not raining. God damn it, Ryan! That's Ryan's thing.
That's
right. Ryan walks up right as you're in the clinic. I'm afraid you've tested positive for the AIDS virus, bro. What are you doing here? Oh, God damn it, Ryan!
Always with the bad news.
Always walks right in. What are you guys talking about? Are you a real doctor?
Horrible Timing Tommy is what that character should be called. Like a guy just constantly coming in.
Cheery as all hell.
Misreads every situation.
And that's what he did.
Yeah.
He just came over like it's Denver, so he's just like, "So, man, Peyton, Super Bowl, what's going to happen?"
Oh.
What's happening, man?
Yeah.
Just, his edible just kicked in.
It's like, well, yeah.
Wow.
Well, I can tell you who's not coming to the party. Stephanie's not going to be there because we're kind of in the middle of something right now.
We're breaking up.
Yeah, we're breaking up. Oh, that's cool.
God damn it.
Steph, but we like you.
Get a divorce? No, I got to get a Christmas tree for both of you. It's right here.
You got to come back because I feel like we could talk for hours.
So,
Agent Carter.
Yeah. Watch Netflix. And
Big Dumb Animal on Netflix.
Big Dumb Animal on Netflix. And I did a web series for Comedy Central.
Nice.
With Kevin Avery.
Wait, I think I heard you talking on The Nerdist about this.
Yes.
Which, by the way, you're brilliant on that
thank
podcast.
Thank you. It's called White Flight. It's about the year 2042 when whites are no longer the majority in America. And the leader and CEO of America, who's played by Sam Tremel on True Blood.
Yeah.
He basically is like, he's this folksy good old boy. Yeah. He teleports all white people into Canada, absorbing it as the new United States under the "We Just Think It'd Be Better If" act. So under a PR stunt, he leaves a white person every 25 miles. So my character, Gary, is just an out-of-work actor in L.A. who wakes up to find he's the only white person in all of Los Angeles.
That's fucking
And I wrote
brilliant.
It with Kevin, who's a hilarious black
he's very
comedian.
Funny.
And I just want people to watch it because I'd love it to get picked up to a pilot and
right?
a series.
It sounds awesome.
It was so fun to do.
Yeah.
Ian Edwards is in it. And,
love Ian.
Hari Kondabalu and just a bunch of funny people that were able to just play in this ridiculous world.
And it's already it's on ComedyCentral.com right now?
Yeah. Right. And last thing I'll say, Ian Edwards had the best improvised line where I have like a little town hall where the neighbors come. And, it, you know, they're like, "Where's my white husband? Where's my white kid?" You know, and Yeah, they're all, we just had people just yelling stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, guys, I don't know what's going on. And Ian Edwards, like, you hear him go, hey, no, because I got tandem parking and my white neighbor's car is behind my car, yo. And that was such a beautiful
and just delivery,
you know,
too. Right?
All he wants to do is get out of his garage. Nothing to do with his best friend is gone.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good.
Okay, stuff. Thanks, Matt.
And at Matt Bronger on Twitter.
Yeah, just at Bronger.
At Bronger.
At Bronger, yeah.
Well, that's, why not the Matt?
I just got, I thought it was clever to have it at Bronger. Like
Bronger is a unique last name.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Are there other Brongers out there?
Yeah. They're mostly in Iowa. Yeah.
Doing what?
Couple in Oregon. Doing what? Skinning frogs. I don't have a thing they all do. That's just all Brongers are pretty much from Sioux City, Iowa. That's kind of where they originated. Nice. For the most part, yeah.
Nice.
Okay, yeah. So shots fired, people in Sioux City.
It's a great town.
You're not keeping up the Bronger name. You got this Matt guy over
here.
They're
doing fine.
He's toeing the line for all of you people.
They still have Bronger Market and Bronger Meats, and that's still there.
Do they really?
My great-grandfather started that one. Yeah.
Bronger Meats?
Bronger Meats.
That's incredible.
You go to Sioux City, and my name is on a bunch of trucks driving around.
That's
maybe
awesome.
Carrying bodies. Order yourself a steak.
Good night, everybody.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know.
But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that
Brad Williams and Adam Ray can help you get through the fucking day. Just follow us on Twitter at Funny Brad, and I'm at Adam Ray Comedy.
This has been the About Last Night podcast. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's me, Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.